This is Kurt.
And this is Tracy.
And this is the MFG Cast. Hey everybody, welcome to another board game edition of the MFG Cast. It's been a bit.
Of the MFG Cast?
No, it's been a bit since we've...
The game stuff.
Since we've recorded a board game edition of everything here. Life's been kind of crazy lately, so we apologize. It hasn't taken away our board game playing, but it has taken away some of our recording, so we're trying to get back on track. Today we're going to be talking about a couple of games that we've been playing. One is Takedo Duo, and the next one would be Morels. You're staring at me.
That was very matter of fact.
You're staring at me so intently, I'm like...
That was just, you were really talking.
Okay, alright. So, what game do we want to get into first?
Well, let's talk about Takedo Duo first. We played this one... Gosh, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I know. Which is funny. We've actually played quite a few games since we last recorded, but...
We just figured we'd grab a couple.
Yeah.
To talk about, because as much as we try to make our explanation of games brief, we always manage to to explain them much longer than we intend to.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
So maybe today we can do our best to be brief on it.
Yeah, I hope so. So the first game that we're going to be talking about today is Takedo Duo. It is kind of along the same lines of Takedo, with a few differences. It's a two-player version of it.
Hence the duo.
Yes. But you know, with a lot of two-player games, it's kind of like they're kind of more like, I'm trying to think of the word, like hardcore, like, you know.
Gotcha.
Yeah, almost kind of like gotcha games, you know, that kind of thing. This one's a little less so. There are times where you can kind of screw over the other player or whatever, but not as much in this. So what are we doing in Takedo Duo?
So first I want to say in the game, the cool part about it is they did not take away from the look and feel like the first game.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the cool art and things like that.
Yeah.
They... really carried that through in Takedo Duo, which I appreciate because I really liked the presentation of the first game.
Yeah, for sure.
So that was really cool. And then they kind of carried over a lot, not a lot, pieces, I should say, of the other game on things that you do. So you still have character boards, which makes sense, but you also are doing things that you... versions of things that you did in the original Takedo.
Yeah.
So we'll kind of talk about this as if you've played Takedo before.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah.
So you're collecting pairs of items and things like that you did, like you played in Takedo.
Well, not pairs per se,
not,
but like...
Not pairs, groups.
Groups, correct. Yes, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I didn't realize I even said the word pairs.
Yeah. That's why I was like, wait a minute, you can carry more than that, but you could do pairs as well.
Yeah. You're donating to the temple, but it's a little bit different because you're just moving a piece along the temple, your own individual temple track versus... actually adding temple coins like you would have in the original Takedo game.
Yep.
And then I'm trying to think, is there any other pieces that you're doing that are similar? Otherwise there's...
Yeah, like the paintings, like you have the paintings that you're...
Oh, yeah.
You're doing like you would in the original Takedo, but in this game you're actually donating paintings to get victory points.
Yep, and then there's also a piece on your own individual game board that... depending on where you land on this this game board in this game, you're just collecting points at the end of the game. Mm-hmm. So you're moving along your own little track also.
Yeah.
So, but there's a few different items that they added or made some tweaks and changes to. There's an artist where the artist actually travels along like a segment of your own personal game board and starts flipping over pieces of art based on where your character lands. And then you can sell, like Kurt said, paintings to collect points for end game scoring.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a pilgrim who travels.
I think those are the pilgrims are the ones that travel alongside the outside of the board, correct?
Yes. They travel along the outside of the board, and depending on where you land, you can do certain actions. So there is a spot where you can land and get certain, it's not really called powers.
Yeah, but they kind of are. I can't remember what they call them. I think they call them...
I'm just looking.
Oh, water something, I think. I can't remember what that's actually called.
They're wave tiles.
Wave tiles, that's it. Yep. That's
so
right.
You land on a seashore, which... It looks similar to like one of the paintings that you would be collecting pieces to in the original Tokaido, but yeah. This one is waves, and there's certain things that if you decide to use one of these effects, you don't have to, it's not mandatory, but it can help you along your gameplay. So one would be if it's out there that it would help you to do plus or minus, maybe not plus or minus, it'd be plus... to an action or something like that, depending on what that is. There's like six different waves that are potential to be placed at the beginning of the game, but only three actually lay out at the beginning.
Yep, because they're double-sided. So like one of them would be plus one and the opposite side would be a minus one for a certain thing and stuff like that.
Yep, and so those help. But again, like I said, not mandatory. There's also, we talked about selling certain things. So you have the ability to be able to collect a certain number of wares. And so you can sell, like, if you land in a certain, or you get to a certain area, you can sell, like, water, or you can sell a t-shirt or something like that, and mm-hmm. you collect coins for selling however many you sell. If you sell three or four, depending on what item you're selling, you collect coins. And then once you collect 10 coins, you cash it in for this oval golden coin, which you start putting them on your game board. Because I think the end of the game is triggered. Is that correct?
Yeah, if you hit all of those gold coins and put them at the bottom of that at the bottom of that board, once you hit the last one, then you would trigger the end game. It actually all three of the characters that you use during the game have end game triggers for the end of the game.
Yep. So if you add your sixth, they call them gold slabs.
Gold slab.
Here I was thinking of something like really like intricate on a what they're called, but they're called slabs.
Yeah.
So if you collect your sixth gold slab, meaning you have 10 coins that you cash in to collect this gold slab, that triggers end game. Or if a pilgrim reaches the final slot of the temple, which there's quite a few pegs that they have to get to. I'm trying to think of how many. 3, 6, there's 9.
Yep.
Or if you move, or the garden track, excuse me, and the garden track is 6 spaces, but remember that you can't move all these at the same time.
Yeah.
You have to select one. So it sounds maybe easy if you only have to move this peg 6 slots, but you actually have to have the appropriate timing and have your...
to the certain spots.
Yeah, have your person land on that.
So, like, what Tracy didn't say, which is something that I'll just kind of tie in, like, when you move yourself on that one track, there's the temple track, but then it's also... it gives you victory points, but it's also multiplied by the garden track, too. So, if you move on the garden track and you move that piece down the garden track that actually does a multiplier between the two and gives you more victory points at the end of the game.
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
That's why I didn't say it. That's what happens when you play this a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And then the last one that could signify the end of the game would be as if the artist, the artist was the one that I talked about where you were painting and then you were selling your paintings. And then underneath there were points that you were collecting for end of game. If they gift their 10th painting token, which means that their board is empty.
Yep.
Which I don't think we got.
Not in the games we played.
That might have triggered mine.
You did.
I got to.
I never got to any of those tracks. The end of the tracks or whatever.
So, I mean, and then there's other different things too. Hot Springs comes into play too. It just acts a little different than it did in the original Tokaido game. They really just kind of tweak this to allow for two players.
Yeah.
And, but made it so it wasn't really stale in the fact that it wasn't identical to Tokaido.
Yeah, and it's like a smaller game board. There are some ways that you can kind of block off other players. You have to be careful too, because you also with the three characters that you do, I think two of the characters I think can block off each other if you're not careful. So you have to be careful there. You have to have this good balance between trying to get, you know, at least a little bit of every one of the characters moving around and scoring points there. Excuse me. Because if you just try to focus on one of those characters, like you do the Traveler, and just try to travel the most as you can or whatever to get the most points there, you might be losing out on some of the other points for, like, the Painter and stuff like that. So you have to kind of...
you want to move them all.
Yeah, you want to. And you want to try to score as many points as you can that way, obviously, but...
And really, like, you're talking about it being a balance, but you're going to find that there is going to be a balance. What's nice is that... Because you have three characters, the pilgrim who goes around the board in a circle, the artist who goes within the inside of the board,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
And then what's the other one?
The pilgrim. You said the pilgrim.
Merchant?
The merchant, yes.
Who goes to each of the corners or...
They kind of go
in the inside.
Yeah, kind of in the middle and
they
the outside.
They zigzag.
And the painter kind of goes on each different big sections to grab.
In the inside. Yep.
Yeah, the inside of it. Yeah.
So you're going to find that you want to balance the characters anyway. You don't have to think or have to remember, I need to balance these characters, because it's all about you can't go to the same spot as the other person. I can't go to use my merchant with shirts because I don't have shirts.
Yeah.
Or things like that. So it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, like you said, it's got all the same kind of qualities of the original Tokaido, but it makes it a little bit more compact, a little more succinct. Yep. And there's still lots to do. And I feel like you can't... you could play this multiple times without it being stagnant, because there's a lot of multiple ways, multiple paths to victory, you know? So...
Well, because when you're rolling and you're moving your characters too, it's never going to be the same.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
The results aren't going to be the same.
Yeah.
You can try, but that would be pretty boring.
Yeah. You know, it seems like... A lot of these mainstay board games that have a lot of fans, they always try to make them into the two-player version, you know? And you think after a while it'd just be kind of stale and be like, okay, we don't need a two-player version of every single game. But I haven't really played a two-player game of something that I didn't like. And this is kind of the same case with this, too. It's kind of a fun little a different version of Tokaido without feeling the same, you know? That kind of thing.
I can't think of one offhand. There are some that are very, very similar.
Yeah.
I feel like, but I think they did a good job not making it like that.
Yeah, for sure. The other game that we played, and we actually just played this recently, We were at a local ish game store, kind of city or state away in Minnesota.
And not really local.
Well, to us, it's more local than it would be to other people. Anyway.
But it's a nice support of a local business or a small business.
Exactly. It's called The Source. They actually sell a bunch of board games and comics. So if you live around St. Paul, Minnesota, I highly suggest you go there because they've got amazing amount of board games and comic book stuff, which is cool. And we grabbed Morals.
Morels. How about the type of mushroom that you would eat?
Morels. Morels, and then we also bought the expansion for it, which we did not play, but Foray, that is part of that game. But Morels is a foraging mushrooms game, where it's a card game where you are basically hunting out mushrooms, cooking mushrooms, and, you know, making the best out of, you know, finding any mushrooms if you're into that kind of thing. Regardless if you like mushrooms or not, this game is actually really fun. What you're doing in this game is you're putting out 8 cards in a line, and they call that, what do they call that row?
Is that the forest?
The forest?
No, I don't know.
God, I think you're right. Now I'm like, God, am I...
Could she be right?
No, I was doubting. Just it's funny because that's what I thought. And then when you said it, I was like, is that right? I think it is since you said it. It's a forest row of 8 cards.
I mean, it makes sense.
And then both players, this is also a 2-player game. With the 4A expansion, you can make it into 4 players, but we're not going to talk about that. We're just going to talk about the 2-player base game. Each player starts off with 3 cards, and you're playing with these day cards at first, and the day cards are what's in that forest row of 8 cards. And what you're going to be doing is you're going to be taking one of the first 2 day cards that are furthest away from the deck, unless you have foraging sticks, and we'll kind of talk about that in a moment. But what you're doing is, this is a set collection game, is what you're trying to do is you're trying to get a certain amount of a type of mushroom, pair them up, and then cook. To cook, what you're going to be doing is you each start out with a pan token, but there's also pan cards that are also in the deck as well. And when you want to cook those mushrooms, what you're going to be doing is you're going to be putting them in that pan and cooking them. And you can score points based on the pan amount on the cards themselves. So they go from anywhere from, like, I think like 1 to like 6, because I think morels are like 6 points a piece.
They are.
Which is crazy. And for the most part, you have to, when you're cooking, you have to do at least 3 or more mushrooms. If you want to get a multiplier, you can cook with butter. So if you cook with butter, you can do 4 or more mushrooms, and that multiplies the...
You have to do 4 or more.
You have to do 4 or more. You also have the apple cider, which you can do, or you will have to do 5 or more mushrooms, and that will also get you a more of a multiplier that way. I think for the butter, it's times 3, and I think for the apple cider, I think it's times 4.
Yeah.
Another thing you can also do in this as well is you can sell off some of your mushrooms and get foraging sticks, okay? What do these foraging sticks do? What those do is help you get cards further down the row of cards that you have. So those
that are laid out.
That are laid out of the 8 cards. Yeah. So you can get the first 2 for free, but anything past that second card that's furthest from the deck, you have to pay a foraging stick per going up towards the deck. So if you wanted the 4th card, you have to pay 2 foraging sticks. If you wanted to get the 6th card, you would have to pay 4 foraging sticks to get up to that. So that's a good way to be able to get the cards that you want. There's also some special cards in there too that do fun little things. So if you grab a moon, as soon as you grab that moon card, you'll discard it. You'll actually take a knight card, and those actually have certain mushrooms that multiply that by a certain amount. So if you found one that's a morel, it would be whatever that is times 2. So it would be twice the amount of morels, so you could put more morels out when you do the cooking.
But then you wouldn't have as many cards in your hand.
That is true.
Which is nice, because your hand, you can only have 8 cards in your hand?
Yes.
Unless, do you want me to say it?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, you're kind of pointing at me.
I pointed at you like, take it. And you're like, I'm going to pause.
Unless you have baskets laid out. Mm-hmm. And baskets allow you to extend your hand size. So baskets allow you to extend per basket your hand size by 2.
Yeah.
So if you had one basket, your hand size could be 10. Another one would be 12 and so on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is nice because if you're working on a huge collection of mushrooms for more points, then that really comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't collect something and discard something else to have your hand size stay at max capacity. You just have to choose a different action.
Yeah.
Which kind of is nice because it plays different than some other games that we've played before, but at the same time, like, can be frustrating.
Yeah.
So those are very helpful
mm-hmm.
to have in play.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, there's other things you can do during the game. So, like, if you get kind of stuck, you can play a single pan card to keep it going. Oh, one other thing I forgot to say, as you're kind of going through this and picking cards off of that forest row, every time you do an action, you always have to discard one of the cards furthest away from the deck before your turn is over. So if you take during your turn, if you take one of those 2 cards, you'll have to discard one of the other cards into what is called the
decay
pile. Mm-hmm. And the decay pile can have up from 1 to 4 cards. And another action is what you can do is on your turn is you can take those cards from that decay discard pile, whatever you want to call it. And you can bring them into your hand and use them during your turn as long as your hand size allows it. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a fun little catch-up thing. Go ahead.
But once decay caps at 4 and another card is going to go in decay, the decay goes into the general discard pile.
Yeah.
So, and then the decay starts over again, mm-hmm. and then it's always 4 cards, discard, 4 cards, discard.
Yeah.
So I kind of view decay as like a temporary discard. Like, ooh, this is what you could have before we get rid of these cards permanently.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, and sure. It's nice. I mean, we took from the decay
mm-hmm.
both times.
Yeah, it really helps out, especially if there's some good things in there that could really help you out. And then I think the last thing that we probably didn't discuss is the, I think it's called the Avenging Angel Mushroom. Is that what that one was called?
I don't know if it's the Avenging Angel, but it's like the forbidden.
Yeah, it's basically a poison mushroom.
Yeah,
I
viewed it as the poisonous mushroom. Yeah.
And we never got that one, and I can't remember. Is that where you have to discard half your hand or something like that?
No, I read an alternate rule on it because I thought, well, when you first were reading the directions, I thought, well, then why would you ever take it? Like, if you can make it fall into the decay and then just don't take the decay and have it go into the discard pile, like, big deal. But in the alternate directions, it talks about people being kind of a little bit, like, confused at it sometimes. And so they say you can view it as just reducing your hand size.
Okay.
Your hand limit or something like that. So I guess I would have just advised reading up on it in the directions more. We never encountered it, and then there's alternate too. If you don't really like how they wrote it in the initial directions, the alternate directions give you something else if you don't really care for it.
Yeah.
So that when they give an alternate on that, then I'm like, why would we have that?
You know what's funny? And now it makes me think maybe that card is kind of a good idea because then you're able to get rid of some of those cards that you don't really want, and then you'll be able to have that hand size limit reduced, so then you can actually grab some of the cards you want instead of going, well, now what do I do with these cards that are not going to do me any good?
But if you have like 2 and you can't get another one, you can always forage.
You could, but I found towards the end of the game, we were just kind of like there's nothing to do, you know, but, like where if I could have used that card to get rid of some of those junk cards that I really didn't want, maybe I could have gotten something better in the future.
Yeah, I think with our deck though too is we saw a lot of mushrooms at the very beginning,
mm-hmm.
and then we were kind of waiting for pan cards so that we could cook the mushrooms.
Yeah,
which is this is one thought that came through my brain while you were talking is so Kurt was talking about how you cook the mushrooms to be able to have out in front of you for end game scoring, but once you lay them out and cook them, you can't add to it later.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you started cooking Hen of the Wood mushrooms and you were like, oh man, I have two more. You can't add them. You can start another pan of mushrooms. So if you love Hen of the Woods mushrooms and you want to have another pan of them, then collect more and place them out for more victory points at the end.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that was just my randomness,
yeah.
my thought when no, I was thinking.
No, it's good. Yeah, I really like this game. I was like, I'd heard randomly from like podcasts and stuff like that, people saying that they love this game, and we just never gave it a try, and I'm glad we did.
Uh huh. The one thing we didn't talk about was the end of the game.
Oh, the end of the game where once the end of the deck runs out, basically you kind of play out.
Yep, play out the rest of the forest cards, and then each player counts up the mushrooms that they cooked. Including any of the special, I'm going to call them special ingredients. So if you've added butter or you added apple cider to your pan,
mm-hmm.
you add those multipliers on with it, tally them up, and then whoever has the highest score wins.
Yep, yep.
So it is it's a fast but not fast game.
Yeah, I think once we play it a little bit more, it'll get a little bit fast. But that deck is
deck was big.
It's stacked, yeah.
But it wasn't like a really long game.
No,
it wasn't like a 10-minute game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yes, going back to now. Mm-hmm. Now that we talked about Endgame.
Yeah.
This game, I had been eyeing up for years, I think, because it's hit the top 2-player games for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
So, we just had to kind of hit the... What am I saying? We just had to finally make the decision to buy it.
Yeah, for sure.
Which I don't know why we didn't.
No, I don't know. Yeah, plays well. It looks pretty. I love the art. The art's very, like... It almost reminds me of, like, the old art you would see in the books for the Lord of the Rings and stuff like that. It's really cute. I like it. I'm really excited to play the 4A expansion as well. It expands it to 4 players. It also has a solo mode, so you can play it solo, which is cool. I might have to do that eventually. But it adds a bunch of different things, like certain characters that you can use for certain things. There's also like another row of cards that you can use during it and stuff like that.
And you said to 4 players, but you can actually play 3 also. Because I think that you just take out some of the characters.
Gotcha.
If you want to play 3 player.
Gotcha.
And then you must play everything if you want to have 4 players, but you do need morels to play 4A.
Yes. Yep.
2.
But yeah. Yeah. Really dig this game. I'm glad we got it and we finally played it. Want to play it some more.
Same.
So yeah, here's a couple of games that we were able to get to the table. Hopefully you're excited about them. We've really enjoyed them. Yeah. You can always let us know if you played any of these games and if you've liked them. We're on Instagram, MFGcast. We're also on Blue Sky, MFGcast as well. Make sure you check out our YouTube videos, and we've got a bunch of RPG fun stuff that we're still releasing. I've actually got some new stuff that I'm looking at also doing for the future, so keep an eye on that. And until next time, I'm Kurt.
And I'm Tracy.
And this was the MFGcast. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is a proud member of the Legends of Tabletop Broadcast Network. For more gaming-related content, please visit www.legendsoftabletop.com.